Oh, those pesky Big Ten schedule makers. For the third time in the Ryan Day era, Buckeyes are starting with three conference road games out of their first four games, 2019, 2021, and now 2025. What a coincidence, Berm, that stat also has a bunch of threes in it. I don't know how that happens, but it is a Three Things Thursday on the beat, so it's fitting. By the way, Buckeyes were 4-0 in both of those previous seasons. They're now 1-0 in the midst of this road gauntlet to start the 2025 campaign. What do you make of that number?
I think it's fine.
Great.
I mean, what is it? I mean, you know, every other year you're going to run into some weirdness in the schedule because there's no rhyme or reason or consistency to any of it. So what's the old adage? You have to play who's in front of you, right? So go out there and do it. It is weird because I was thinking about that earlier this week. It's October 1st as we record this. Ohio State's not going to play another game at home after this weekend for a month. It is very strange.
One home game in October. One game in the horseshoe in October. That's crazy. And the last one was September 13th. This stretch, it's got to be maddening. We spent so much time talking about Ohio State wanting primetime games and spotlight opportunities in the horseshoe. How about just any? They're going to get one on Saturday night. It is homecoming. Minnesota will be in town. But this schedule is pretty strange to me. But again, as you said, there's nothing Ohio State can do but play the team in front of it and play the schedule that it was handed by the Big Ten.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because fall in October at Ohio Stadium is like the best time of the year to be at Ohio Stadium. That's really when it feels most like football. And for a state that obviously views football in such a religious way, it's like taking away Christmas, you know. But the nice thing, I guess, for us is that we get to end the season without having to go anywhere. You know, in the last 3 weeks of November, we have to go to Purdue and Ann Arbor in November. So it's not like we have to do a bunch of bad travel, you know, so that's nice. I mean, Purdue in November is certainly bad travel, but at least I was going to let that one go
and say there's potentially a lot more travel for Ohio State waiting on the other side of that trip to the Big House. But that's neither here nor there. You said the best time of year, best time of the week. It's a Three Thoughts Thursday to me, but I like them all. I like every day on the beat. This one, though, gives us a chance to branch out for some different topics. And the first one for me, we spent 2 weeks talking about the different ways that Washington could and would challenge Ohio State and what it would reveal about them. And so far this week, it's just been like, it's an Ohio State, this is about us week. Minnesota's not got a ton of a juice to them. This matchup is more than three touchdowns on the point spread. What did you find, Berm? What thing about Minnesota do you believe will provide some sort of challenge for the Buckeyes on Saturday night?
I don't know. The thing is, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I've watched a bunch of Minnesota. I watched as much of their game against Rutgers last week as I could. I listened to their game against Cal on the radio when I was driving home from Columbus after Ohio State's most recent night game against Ohio. Certainly, it's a fairly typical Minnesota team. They're big up front. They're big in the middle. They are going to force you to be physical. That's what Ryan Day talked about on Tuesday in his press conference. And really, that's what it comes down to. We've seen the Ohio State rushing attack outside of Bo Jackson, who's obviously been fairly consistent, averaging 8+ yards a carry. The productivity of James Peoples and C.J. Donaldson has been hit or miss. And Minnesota has the number 5 ranked rush defense in the country. They're only giving up 65 yards a game rushing. They're only giving up 2.3 yards per carry. That is good for 5th in the country. Texas, for example, is 3rd in the country. We saw Ohio State struggle pretty badly to run the ball against the Longhorns, averaging, 2 yards a carry in that game. So I think this will be a good test for Ohio State to figure out whether or not the run game woes have been adequately patched up, or if Bo Jackson is just providing that much of a difference in the run game himself, because there's going to be a desire, I think, for Ohio State. And this, you're not going to worry a lot about Minnesota running up and down the field against you or putting up a ton of points, but you certainly know that this is an opportunity to test your physical mettle. The Buckeyes' offensive line has been very, very good against the pass rush. They protected Julian Sayin well But when it comes to the run game, there's been some inconsistencies. And that's not just with the offensive line. That's with the tight ends blocking. That's with the wide receivers blocking. That's with everybody being physical at the point of attack. And Bo Jackson's had the talent to make those things feel less important because he pops so many big runs by himself. But he's still getting hit pretty early. And so we'll see how the Buckeyes combat that, because I think that's the one area where Minnesota can challenge Ohio State, or at least make this a who are you type of game.
Yeah, statistically, there's nothing that's even really close. This is the strength of Minnesota. Really, that front seven has been disruptive. I think you're looking at the tackles for loss. They've got seven different players on their defense who have multiple tackles for loss already this year. Anthony Smith has six of them, including 4.5 sacks. So I was thinking along the same lines as you, is that this is a test, obviously, because Minnesota's rush defense has been very good, but you can expand that picture and include the offensive line. If we're, you know, you have to take it with a little bit of grain of salt. Minnesota has not played the most challenging schedule by any stretch of the imagination, and losing to Cal, I doubt that it looked or sounded any better on the radio than it looked on television. That is not what you expect from a Big Ten team that is trying to make a push with PJ Fleck. And is this like his 50th year there now? I don't feel like he's been rowing the boat for a very long time.
I think, but I mean, you know, he still looks young.
He does.
Selling his soul.
Just a beautiful, beautiful chest as well. He's been working out, not missing that day. So I think that's it. If
Washington's only giving up 230 yards a game of total offense, and I think they give up like 700 to Cal. So it's been interesting their other three games.
And a lot of that, again, is, well, A, it's tied into the level of competition they face. They've not seen anything like Ohio State and probably won't again, to be honest. And B, like, they offset a lot of the negative work that they did against Cal by generating negative plays against the rest of the competition they've played. That is a huge pile of tackles for loss that Minnesota has created. So I thought Washington and their defensive front was more active than I thought they were going to be. And I thought that wound up being a good test and one in the noise that the Ohio State offensive line passed. You know, we've spent the last couple of weeks kind of, you know, picking and prodding and seeing if there was going to be a change at right guard with Ethan Onyanwa making a push. Ohio State was very much content to roll with Tegra Shibola a week ago against the Huskies. But, you know, looking at that and finding the consistency and the way that the Buckeyes want to use Bo Jackson, CJ Donaldson, James Peoples, came away kind of impressed with the way that they were able to manage opportunities for all three of them a week ago. I don't know that that's sustainable in every single game, but if James Peoples is just going to be a little bit of that gadget player and a threat out of the backfield, I think that's fine in the meantime, because Bo Jackson has given a lot more than I think anybody would have rightly anticipated for the first month of the season. But yeah, if there's been an opening for a little bit of that skepticism, it's still been with the snap in, snap out consistency of the run game. And that would be the part that you look at Minnesota where they're most equipped to reveal something about Ohio State on Saturday night.
Yeah, and I talked about it on Monday at Roosters on the live show there. You know, for me, one of my bigger concerns remaining for this season is Ohio State's ability to stop the run. So that this is a game, especially if Darius Taylor returns for Minnesota. He's missed the last two games. He's their leading rusher, their leading running back. Their backup running back is out also. So maybe you don't get the best sense of things, especially if Darius Taylor doesn't play. But Minnesota is going to be well aware of the fact that they're going to that Ohio State is comfortable playing a slowed down game, a fast game. And Minnesota knows if they're going to have a chance to win this game, that's what they're going to have to do. So I don't think that the Gophers will throw the ball as much as they have throughout the early part of the season. Drake Lindsey, their quarterback, as I said on Monday, they're throwing it 55% of the time this season, which is a departure from the norm for them. But some of that might be because Darius Taylor's missed the last two games. So if he gets back and is healthy and is ready to go, I think you're going to see a heavy dose of Minnesota trying to test Ohio State that way as well. So it's the trenches, it's the run game both ways, I think, that are the most interesting potential matchup snafu for Ohio State this weekend.
Well, I wonder if we'll stay in the trenches as we head to thought number two, which I was curious now, four games into the season, a third of the way through the regular season, Berm, which I didn't use to kick off Three Thoughts Thursday in a major upset.
Yeah, really missed the boat.
Well, row the boat. Which is the most surprising position group on this roster to you?
Let's define surprising. How do we quantify?
Well, I texted it to you because this is the rare show where I said, here's the three thoughts that you can think about before you talk about them. And I, the way I phrased it was the group that has most exceeded your expectations for them.
Okay. So there's two directions I could go here if we're talking about who's exceeded my expectations, because nationally, I think like the linebacker play would be the biggest surprise for people, because a lot of people had no idea who Arvell Reese was.
You tried to tell them. You tried.
I did try. But they wouldn't listen. But people are catching on to that. So I think nationally, there's a lot of people who might be surprised to be like, holy moly, who is this guy and why are these linebackers so different than they've been? That's not a surprise to us because we were aware of what Arvell was going to be. So there's two spots, and one of them is a drill down inside of the, it's the offensive tackles for me. It's not the offensive line in general, because I fully expected the interior of the line to be pretty good. And I think in some ways, the inconsistency at right guard has actually caused me to have less results out of that interior offensive line than I anticipated. But the tackles between Philip Daniels, who obviously had two bad penalties on Saturday, but his overall play in Austin Saraveld has been so much better than I would have anticipated at tackle. But the real answer, and I guess it shouldn't be a surprise, it's quarterback at Ohio State is quarterback, is Julian saying what he's done, the efficiency has been so much better than I expected in the first four games that, you know, it's hard for me not to say that. I mean, I know that there's a number of different metrics to measure quarterback success, rating, and all those things. But as one of only, I think there's only four quarterbacks in the country throwing the ball for more than 10 yards per attempt. And Julian Sain is one of them. And to be one of four quarterbacks throwing the ball that far down the field per average attempt and still leading the country in passing percentage at nearly 80% is pretty remarkable to have to be leading in both of those areas. He's made smart plays. He's getting smarter every week. He's learning. The offense is obviously been intentionally slow, and that's something we've discussed multiple times and we'll continue to talk about. But to me, it's the offensive tackles and it's Julian Sain, because they've been virtually perfect for 4 weeks, which is not expected.
Yeah, I think with Julian Sain, it doesn't qualify as a bold prediction to say this five-star recruit playing for Ryan Day is going to be a really good passer. I think there was an expectation that that would happen at some point. I think I'm with you. It's happened much quicker than I thought it would, especially coming out of the Texas game, where it's like clearly an effort made to manage that, get through that game, mitigate the risk, and then see what happens and maybe grow from there. And he made throws in that game. Even the opening drive, the throw to Max Clair that was dropped, was like, there wasn't a lot much more that Julian Sain could have done. And he was setting, I think, the tenor for what this was going to look like throughout the season moving forward. He's not still a finished product, which is also crazy to say, given all the stats that you rattled off. But, you know, if you had said this is what Julian Sain's going to look like by the time Ohio State plays Penn State, I'd say, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But the fact that it's happened by Washington is a real credit to Julian Sain, for starters, but also to Ryan Day and Billy Fessler and Brian Hartline, and credit goes to these wide receivers as well. That also makes it easy, but the ball has just like 99.9% of the time been exactly where it needs to be. And that accuracy, whether we thought that would be the strength of Julian Sain or not, is still a wonder to behold. It is awesome to watch.
Yeah. It's shocking though. It's a reminder of the expectation or the standard at Ohio State for the quarterback, because if you go back to that first Ohio State possession of the season against the number one team in the country at midfield, the disappointment was he didn't throw a fourth and one touchdown pass for 50 yards to Jeremiah Smith. And all he was doing was checking down to a 20-yard gain on fourth down against Texas, the number one team in the country, in his first drive of the season. And we still are talking about it a month later going, well, he was a fraction of a second late on that throw, and it only hit the tight end in both of his hands and right between the 8 and the 6 on his chest, and he dropped it. So, you know, Julian probably could have been a little cleaner there. Like, that's the expectation. And so that's why when plays like the second interception, especially against Ohio, occur, you're like, oh, that's unexpected from him.
What happened?
What are you doing? You know, the first one you can understand against Ohio, because that was like he's just being confident and taking his shots, and That's the one ball this year I think he really underthrew. And you know, when it came to a pass in a difficult scenario. So Julian's just been awesome. But again, I don't want to disclude what Austin Sarrivold and Philip Daniels have done, because those guys are the reason that he's had got so much time to sit back there and pick defenses apart.
Yeah. I thought it was, it really struck me on Saturday, because they came back to basically the exact same concept, same throw, Julian Sain finding Max Clair along the sideline. And this time it was even better timing. Max Clair makes the catch, gets the feet in bounds, and they move the chains. So that's, those signs of growth are like clearly there. And I think nationally people are clued into that. They were probably watching for it anyway, because it's Ohio State's quarterback and people already know who Julian Sain was because of his recruiting profile and signing with Alabama and leaving and all that. But I think for me, and those are two good choices, and we could talk about them a lot more, but if we're talking about exceeding expectations, especially on the heels of what just happened at Washington, I think you have to talk about the Ohio State defensive line. And you mentioned it earlier with Minnesota's run game, and if they're at full strength, there may still be room to ask about the depth and the run-stopping ability up front for this group. That would be fine. I think that that's it's well within the realm of conversation and not unfair to talk about it that way. They could still get better, but in terms of 8 months of conversation about depth and productivity and replacing those four starters, what Caden Curry, Kenyatta Jackson, and Caden McDonald just did at Washington is crazy town banana pants. I don't know how anyone could have expected there would be games like that with that level of tackle for loss production, 6 sacks from them combined. That was not in the cards. Like, can you just be consistent? Can you avoid the big plays? Can you play disciplined football? They're capable of so much more. And I know that you have said that for a long time about Caden Curry, and we've seen, you know, the physical profile and potential with Kenyatta Jackson for years, that he just looks like the prototype first round NFL defensive end. I've certainly talked about Caden McDonald's opportunities a ton. And yeah, we would like to see more from Tywan Malone, Edric Houston, some combination of that. Maybe Jason Moore, as he comes back from injury, can help provide some of that. But it, given what those other three guys are doing, it's starting to feel to me more like nitpicking and taking for granted like the elite productivity of those other three if we just talk about what might not be perfect with the fourth.
No, but I think the problem or the wedge here comes from the fact that you've got those three and then you still don't know what you have after it, because it's been inconsistent from Edric Houston. Obviously there's been some improvement and some stepping up happening from Tywan Malone, but Ryan Day talks too much about the length of the season and all of the things that are going to be required for a long-term success to continue to ignore. Defensive line was certainly one of those positions that I was thinking about for this conversation. But to me, there still just is not enough meat on the bone behind those guys. Yes, the especially Caden and Caden, they have performed at such a level that was above even our lofty expectations. And we are clearly and have been the presidents of the Caden Curry fan club here and Caden McDonald fan club for you. But those two have exceeded expectations in such a way that I think it's like a rising tide lifting all boats situation where you're like, hey, we can work with this. But then there still has to be someone else that is going to emerge and provide not just depth, but some explosive plays. And so if we see that out of Kenyatta Jackson last week, now if he's healthy and starting to feel some confidence, Ryan Day, I thought the most interesting thing that he said, or one of the interesting things he said on Tuesday about Kenyatta, was that his body language was better than he's ever seen it. And it's maybe hindsight's 2020, but I completely agree. Like on the field, it was a different version of Kenyatta Jackson. So if
after that the game, version, when we yeah. talked to him on the notebook, he was carrying himself differently.
So if that version sticks around, watch out. Like sometimes you just need to have that afternoon that reminds you who you are. And I think Kenyatta had that. So now the question is, who else gets pulled along in that conversation? Is it Edric Houston time to step up? Is Tywan Malone going to make that next step? Someone's going to have to do it. Maybe this week it's Caden McDonald and Will Smith playing a lot together, because if Darius Taylor's back for Minnesota, maybe you see the Buckeyes try to get a little heavier in the middle. I think this position group discussion, you know, who's exceeded expectations, it starts with Matt Patricia and everything that's going on with the defensive schematics, because they've been able through four games to obviously have the best defense in the country, but have done it in so many different ways and have done it in a way that has not exploited their weakness at all, which, you know, they're finding ways to get creative. And Caden McDonald and Caden Curry have been so good when they're out there that it's giving time for the other guys to come along. And I think that's what makes their expectation surpassing performance so important and so valuable.
I think it also, Berm, it ties into why Ohio State is playing at this tempo. If they have some uncertainty about the defensive depth, the more rest you can give them and the fewer opportunities that you have to put on the field to potentially expose your depth, the better you're going to be. So I don't have any issue with the way that Ryan Day is approaching this build into the season, especially in terms of tempo. We got a number of questions, though, about if that tempo might impact Ohio State's ability to win individual awards. I answered one of those for question of the day at Letterman Row on Wednesday about how that relates to Jeremiah Smith's Heisman Trophy chances. Maybe we'll talk about that as we go in here. I posed it to you, though. Who is the Buckeye that you are absolutely certain will win an individual award this year?
Emeka Abuka.
Oh, okay. NFL Rookie of the Year.
That's right. NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year. You can just lock that one up right now.
I didn't specify. Man, you tricked me.
Yep, you can lock that one up right now for Mech as the NFL's Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Faux I think show. We tried to tell people about him too, but nobody would listen.
I think this is interesting because reputationally, I don't see any way Caleb Downs doesn't win the Thorpe Award. So I think that's like locked in. I think the conversation now nationally about Arvell Reese becomes so loud that it's hard to, like, or coming into the season, all the talk at linebacker was about like Anthony Hill and other stuff. I think that at Texas, who's played well, but Arvell has just captured the imagination of the country. But linebacker is sort of a niche position and people judge it based on different things. Like, you know, maybe some guys are going to have 160 tackles and Arvell will only have 75. And so you're not going to view him the same way if you haven't watched him play. Right. So to me, I mean, it's Caleb Downs. Like that's a no brainer. I don't see how anyone else can win that award. Even wide receiver, where we know Jeremiah Smith is the best receiver in the country and should win the Biletnikoff. We've seen it in the past. Voters in the South especially like to give their votes to the Tennessee guys. Chris Brazell there at Tennessee is playing pretty well at wide receiver, so I'm not going to be surprised if he or Mekhi Lemon at USC end up winning the Biletnikoff just from a statistical standpoint, but it's Caleb Downs for sure.
Yeah, I wanted to double check all of those numbers with Jeremiah Smith because, the way that this topic was posed was if with this slower tempo at Ohio State and depressing the numbers, the number of catches and opportunity, touches for everybody, if it's going down, is that going to keep Ohio State from winning individual awards? And it doesn't appear like that's actually it's not impacting Jeremiah Smith currently.
No, his numbers are up.
The odds of him winning the Heisman actually improved on Saturday at Washington. He still had 8 catches. He still had 81 yards. He still had a touchdown. He's got 5 touchdowns already. He's in the top 10 nationally in catches per game and yards per game, right at 99 per game. So, you know, that's a non-negotiable part of the Ohio State offense. Even when his numbers were slightly depressed against Texas, I believe he still had 6 catches in that game. So he's going to get – you can't build an offense that includes Jeremiah Smith without – including Jeremiah Smith as a focal point. Even if he's getting double covered, he is still dominating. And I think that there's a greater recognition of his importance to the Ohio State offense because of what he did a year ago. And everyone is aware that he's getting double coverage and saw what he did in the playoff run. All that's going to be in the back of their mind. It's not supposed to count for voting for this year's awards, but you can't forget about it and what he accomplished a year ago and the level of attention that he gets both nationally and from defenses on a week-to-week basis. Still puts him in a position where I think the Biletnikoff will be his. It would be stunning to me if he doesn't win. I've seen crazier things happen with individual awards, but as these other quarterbacks falter, that's also playing into Jeremiah's betting odds to win the Heisman improving. He's currently third amongst the favorites right now. I'm starting to think that there's a much better chance than anticipated that Jeremiah will win that, but the guy that I'm certain will win it is that the Remington Trophy dynasty will continue. Carson Hensman is playing at such a high level And as long as Ohio State's offense continues to improve and build, and doesn't mean that they have to score 50 points a game, but if they're winning every single game and you don't look at sack numbers, you don't look at Julian Sain getting hit, you see the Bo Jackson exploding, that's some, they're going to look for someone to give credit to. And I don't think it'll happen for Austin Sereveld, but that's when the cop-out comes. And I mean that as like a national voter perspective, not here. I think Carson Hinsman deserves full accolades and attention for what he's accomplished, and his story is awesome. But given Ohio State's reputation at that position and the ongoing success of this program, he's going to be in the mix, and I bet that he wins it.
Yeah, it's a unique spot, because that's another award that a lot of times just goes to the guy who's got the most name recognition coming into the season. It's unusual, obviously, for a player to be a full-time starter at center, then to lose his job, be replaced by a guy from another school who wins the Remington Award, but then only plays 10 games. And the guy that is now the former starter has to come back and be the starter, and is the starter and probably played as well, if not better, in his 5-game final stretch to the season than the Remington Award winner did in his 10 games. And so then you head into this season with a lot of momentum. The only thing that I think holds Carson Hinsman back potentially is if people are sick of giving this award to an Ohio State Buckeye, because this would be the fifth time in 10 years. And so maybe people get, you know, some Ohio State fatigue there. But what Carson Hinsman's done, especially now that you've already passed the test at Washington, the next major like road test for Ohio State is not till the end of November. So like the next time for like a really weird game where the center has to be put into the spotlight and handle a lot of extra stuff will be in Ann Arbor. So there's a lot of time for Carson Hinsman to build up that resume. But the resume starts at the top, and that's just with his name, because people know it, you know. But yeah, the story, the Carson Hinsman story is one. Let's fast forward here, and while we would never assume something as rare as a national championship, if Ohio State wins a national championship this season, the stories that will come out of this team, like the story of Carson Hinsman, is one that will need to be told many times over for a kid from a high 4-star player from a different Big Ten state who comes in, sits a year, changes positions, has 3 different position coaches in 4 years, gets benched, gets reinserted into the lineup, comes out even better. It's Iron Buck.
At like, a different position initially.
Yeah. What an amazing story. And Carson's personality and the way that he's handled himself has really been just awesome. And he's becoming one of our favorite guys to talk to on the team on a week-to-week basis. You know, becoming a resident truth teller, but the real truth is that he's just the best and most consistent center in the country.
He is. And like, there should be no voter fatigue. I think Ohio State has built and cultivated a reputation for elite center play, and you can't ignore it. That puts him on the short list for candidates every year. And it's like a wise philosopher once said, to be the man, you got to beat the man. And Ohio State centers, they are the man. There's no doubt about it.
Who said that?
Yeah. Well, you were right there. Woo!
Oh, okay. Okay. So it's Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that there's nothing the viewers of The Beat love more than when I feign ignorance about anything to do with wrestling.
Yeah. It's,
you know, when I was a wee baby, I watched wrestling all the time. Even when I was in my late teens, 30 years ago, I was watching wrestling, you know, but I can't stay up to date. There's too many wrestles happening. That's the problem. It's 5 nights a week now. It's too much.
Even for me, I would say it's too much. I would agree with you there, partner. You're absolutely right. 2 days away from homecoming. Looking forward to all the festivities, Hall of Fame inductions and ceremonies throughout the weekend. A primetime kickoff, 7:30 on NBC against Minnesota. It's going to be awesome. Tomorrow on The Beat, you know, it's Freaky Friday. So there's going to be some bold predictions as we drill down even deeper into this matchup, the first Big Ten home game for Ohio State. Hope you enjoyed 3 thoughts on a Thursday, also talking about this Ohio State Minnesota game. Because guess what? We talk about the Buckeyes all day, every day, all year round. Thanks for watching. If you did that on 97.1 The Fan, you can also do that on 10TV or 10TV Plus. You can listen on the go if you want on Apple or Spotify. Wherever you watch or listen, we sincerely appreciate you. We hope you have a great Thursday. And we'll be right back here for the Austin and Berm Show on Friday. For Berm, I'm Austin. We'll see you then.